Don't get boxed in by a whiteboarding app with limited functionality. Try Lucid, the visual collaboration platform that covers your team's entire spectrum of work. With Lucid, you can host virtual brainstorms and so much more. Diagram important processes, conduct cross-functional planning on an infinite visual canvas, power your workflows with data and intelligent automation, and bring your best ideas to life. Try Lucid for free at lucid.co/Spotify.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The other thing that I see a lot of people asking is, okay, no match, but was this, I believe it was put into CODIS, I could be wrong. Was it put into CODIS, and was it, did they look in the ancestral one as well, just to give it a shot, to see where that could possibly go, like they did with Koberger?
Okay, two answers for that. First of all, 100% they ran it through CODIS. That's just 101. You know, when you get a fingerprint, you run it through APHIS. When you get DNA, you run it through CODIS. Number two, do I believe they compared it against multiple DNA samples of others that were known to be in that house? Yes. Would they go through genetic genealogy? I don't believe so. First of all, it's extremely expensive, extremely time involved. And, you know, I think their explanation is going to be what we've surmised, and that is you have one blood DNA sample on a railing at a party house. Not, in my opinion, it's not at the crime scene. It's not on one of the victims. It's not on the bed. It's not on the knife sheath. It's not in and around. It's on a railing that people would hold. If you have a hangnail, blood could get there. I mean, come on. So I think that it probably ended there. Although, because they may be getting concerned about this becoming a huge issue, they may go that route.
They got to do what they got to do. I get it. She is the defense attorney, and she's doing a good job at it, trying to at least put reasonable doubt out there into the public. The other thing that's been brought up, and I do know the answer to this, but maybe you can give us a little better insight on it. Blood DNA versus touch DNA. Now, on the surface, if you know nothing about DNA, it sounds like, well, one must be a lot stronger than the other. They both can lead in very pretty much absolute directions, can they not?
Absolutely. There's blood, semen, hair, sweat, touch, which I hate to even call it touch. It's literally your skin cells that you rub off. In this case, it makes all the sense in the world because that button snap is so difficult to open on a K-bar knife sheath for obvious reasons. And so you're literally scraping those dead cells on your thumb slash finger to, you know, that would be removed and be there. Makes all the sense in the world. But DNA is DNA, meaning once it's been evaluated, it is still DNA and positively can be, and I don't want to say matched, because how DNA works is it's excluded from being anyone else. In this case, in the 8 trillions or something, some number, or octillion, sorry.
It's high,
a number
that
none of us had ever seen, because there's not that many people on the planet. So it's basically so excluded that it's him. And that's how DNA works. And it is DNA.
Yes, I can. And if anybody wants to know more about that, I did an hour the other week with Dan Crane, who is very much part of the world of DNA and genealogy and the science behind all that. Very interesting talk, who goes into super detail on why they both are completely full of merit, but how then we get into the questions. The other point that the defense is making of ethically, what did the FBI act appropriately, or did the investigators act appropriately when going into the genetic genealogy database? From what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is, I heard this, I think it was Robin Drake who explained this to me, was the fact that it's against policy to go into that database, but it's not illegal. It's not against the law, but it would violate an internal type policy for that to have been done, which it was done, but it clearly obviously led us to a specific individual. Is that accurate? How do you view all of that?
how I view all of that is it comes down to warrants.
Mm-hmm.
It comes down to warrants, number one. And I loved how Judge Hippler addressed this. You know, so let me understand this, Ann Taylor. Are you trying to say that somehow there's a right to privacy of Brian Koberger and his DNA wasn't even in the database? I just love that. I mean, generally, you know, I'm absolutely paraphrasing.
Yeah.
But that's the point is, you know, the people that are in that database have some sense of protection, but certainly not from warrants. Mm-hmm. And they sign away, really, their rights to be protected in certain disclosures when they submit their DNA for testing. So as far as FBI policy, my understanding is search warrants. You have to be backed by a judge.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, and I can't imagine that that was not how that was handled.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to that entire hearing and it was long.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the confusing point to me. So you're saying your client had a right to privacy. Oh, his DNA wasn't in it.
It's a lot of word salad that Ann Taylor has been using the last week when talking about all of this. Another point that was brought up earlier in the week, Howard Blum had actually made it with Megyn Kelly. He fully believes that Koberger is behind these alleged crimes. But he had brought up the idea of, was it possibly planted? And I've heard the planting argument now on both sides in different ways. What's your thoughts on that, of the idea that Koberger was so ahead of the game when he was so not ahead of the game in other areas, a la I like to look at stars as my alibi, that he had the foresight to go in and put someone else's DNA on a handrail and in a glove outside, or it was the other quote-unquote killer or killers that were trying to throw people off? Or is that just really kind of a, you know, we're getting into ABC miniseries a la 1988 at this point with this kind of an idea?
I find it all so ridiculous. It's Occam's razor. Again, that glove was found well after. It's a party house. No, he didn't go in there and plant any of this. He made a colossal mistake. A colossal mistake was not securing that sheath, Tony. Mm-hmm. And that is why we're here today, and that's why he's sitting in a cell. I truly believe that but for that knife sheath, this would have been so, would have taken much longer to solve. And because that's really the smoking gun in this, mm-hmm. and that's why they're focused on that, meaning Ann Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, and that's her big thing. She's trying to get that out of court. That's her job to do it. Do you think she has a chance in hell on that happening?
No, I really don't. And I say that only because of listening to Judge Hippler's responses to her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear to me that he believes from a legal perspective under Idaho law that it was collected legally. It was abandoned, if you will. He compared it to fingerprints,
mm-hmm.
as I recall. And he said, listen, you leave a fingerprint at a crime scene and you think that that has some privacy right not to be run through a database? Again, paraphrasing, you guys can go back and listen to all the footage. But my point is he makes a perfect point. If you leave your DNA at a crime scene, do you have no privacy right with that?
Mm-hmm.
And that is really when you dumb all of the word salad down and you look at the law compared to what happened, this is really how simple it is.
Yeah. It seems Ann Taylor is trying to equate equality. Does that make sense in what I'm trying to say? Equate equality to to the handrail and the glove to a knife sheath that's literally under the body, and the knife sheath being the murder weapon, or being, you know, connected to the murder weapon. And she's trying to say, well, they're both one and the same because they both existed in that house. That would also mean that pretty much every piece of DNA in that house is completely equal under her kind of word salad of speaking this week and trying to water this down.
Yeah, no. And again, you know, kudos to the collection being done.
Oh, yeah.
They collected that blood. I mean, it shows their thoroughness. And like I said, I guarantee there's so much other DNA that we're not even discussing in that house that was compared to other individuals, and a positive male match was found. And they haven't found the male, what I would believe was a party goer. They haven't been able to ID him yet. Mm-hmm. I think, actually, if I were on this case, and specifically because I think we're far out from trial, I probably would go through the money and time to do genetic genealogy just to, you know, thwart all of this speculation. I also wonder if they got DNA from the individual on YouTube that discovered the glove.
That'd be interesting. Yeah, I mean, there's, because obviously that would be, did that, you know, did that YouTuber like pick up the glove? Did they do anything with the glove? Did they go, hey, investigators, come here, look at this?
No, they were careful with it.
Okay.
This was a former police officer.
Okay.
So he was careful. But again, as you and I have pointed out, you know, you can have a little nick on your hand and you know, have issues happen with discarding your DNA someplace you don't know you discarded it. And who knows who else might have touched it. I always thought it was possibly a garbage man's glove, only because of how the glove looks.
Yeah.
This isn't a sleek nitrile glove that, you know, one might wear to commit a crime to, so your fingerprints aren't left behind. This was a bulky glove.
Yeah, like like a worker type glove. Yeah,
yeah, that's what it looked like to me. So nothing like what was believed to be worn by the perpetrator of this crime, or like the gloves that were found pursuant to the search warrant in Brian Koberger's possession. So this wasn't that. But I don't think anybody's trying to argue that it's Brian Koberger's. They're trying to argue it, that it would be the real killer's glove. Yeah. But again, it's, the timing is just off.
Watch, it turns out to be OJ's.
Oh, gosh.
Not to make a horrible joke about this whole thing. Oh. Is this going to be, I mean, let's play the cards out and let's pretend that Koberger is convicted and found guilty. Is this going to be like appellate issue number one for Ann Taylor?
Well, you know, I think the prosecution so far has done such a good job of alleviating a lot of appellate issues. He's been, meaning Koberger has been treated with complete kid gloves. Mm-hmm. The Bureau, as I said a long time ago, the Bureau handled the bulk of this whole case that we're now seeing. You know, you had police officers with their names on different documents, but the real investigation piece was really being done by the Bureau. And we have such a strict paperwork and policy that is well inside of what any law requires, which I think is what former Special Agent Drake was trying to say, to prevent any legal issues. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is going to prove to be a huge positive for the prosecution in terms of appellate problems down the road. Mm-hmm. I just don't see any. Will they try to argue? They may, but I don't see what the appellate issue would be in terms of, you know, Sixth Amendment right or, you know, other right that would have been violated.
I know it's going to go anywhere, but I'm just trying to think down the road. What are they going to look at in here and go, well, this may be, you know, just trying to, again, throw something at the wall, which inevitably, if he's found guilty, they certainly will.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.